Adam, thanks for joining us. Great to have you here again on the station. There's so much going on, really, with Bridgestone, and obviously we've got the Augusta National Women's Am. We've got the Masters coming up. Let's start there with Masters specific year, which has become such a little cottage industry in the last, I feel like, 10 years, but even more so in the last few. And every company kind of has their own spin on what merch they're going to put together for the first men's major of the year, and then now the AMWA's here for that as well. So how do you guys do it at Bridgestone Golf? How do you think about trying to outfit players and NIL deals and things like that for these tournaments at Augusta National?
Yeah, I mean, it obviously presents its challenges and opportunities when the majors come around. Of course, we're here in Georgia. The Masters is somewhat of a home game for us, so we're super excited. We're right down the road. We're a little under 2 hours to get over to Augusta. So yeah, we have a couple items. There is a premium stand bag. I mean, obviously we have normal stand bags, but we have a premium stand bag that's kind of like a combo of, I know you've probably seen the premium, the larger stand bags, but this one's a little bit in kind of that in-between space. But it's a green themed stand bag, and it's really premium as far as the leather and the zippers and how it stands up. So that's one that we're super excited about, the premium stand bag. And then, we just have a lot of things going on in the back burner with our players, like little additions they want, stamps on the ball and stuff like that. So we're super excited. But really, as far as the consumer is concerned, that bag is really one of the biggest things we have kind of launching this year, and we'll be promoting that a little bit during that Masters week and time frame. As far as ANWA, just to segue into ANWA, the Augusta National Women's Amateur, we're super excited about that. It continues to grow. We have two players. We have the defending, the current champion of the U.S. Women's Open, Amateur Open, Saki Baba. She's actually a Japanese player, fresh out of high school almost. She's super young still, and she just won the U.S. Women's Am last year, towards the end of last year, and we were super excited about that. Really good signing for us. She's about to turn professional. I believe she's going to turn professional really after this event. I think she pretty much kept her amateur status so she could play in this, which is a smart,
Smart move.
very smart move. Yeah, absolutely. And then Emiliacho, who is a senior at Wake Forest, is a good player that we have, and she's amazing. I don't know if you said you've listened to another golf podcast that we've done. She is my co-host on that, and she's amazing to talk to the players. Brings so much more credibility from the playing perspective than I could ever offer as far as a host is concerned. So she's super good talking to some of our elite players like Tiger, Fred, Jason Day, got her up about like playing styles and practicing and stuff like that. Whereas I'm just an everyday dude. But when it comes to the golf ball stuff, I can jump in there and talk to the guys about golf ball. So it's been super fun having her, be a co-host in that podcast. But she played amazing yesterday. They both
You
made
did.
the cut, and they're both going to play tomorrow. They're playing a practice round today, which is, as we're talking, is Friday. But they'll play on the Saturday round, which will be a competition round at Augusta National. And Amelia was right kind of on the cut line. She birdied the last three holes coming in to get within the cut pretty easily. So she was super solid, finished her round playing really well. She shot one under the first day and then kind of moved inside that cut line as it fluctuated. Like it's crazy. She had mentioned earlier in the week, we get a little caught up in Rose and how good she played. She's kind of running
Yeah,
away with this thing.
amazing.
But she talked about one or two strokes can move you down 10 spaces. So, she made a bogey or two, and then boom, those three birdies, she just jumped way back up there. And she was super excited about everybody wants to make the cut, obviously, and play on Saturday and put it to the real test in a competition round.
Yeah, I mean, I've really enjoyed. I'm glad they've expanded the coverage this year. What
Oh,
they
yes.
hours on the
Yep.
Thursday or excuse me Wednesday Thursday front rounds now, instead of just kind of a little bit of streaming around any potential playoff. That's nice. And then I'm never going to be mad about watching Augusta National on my TV. I don't it, you could show it to me in the worst condition possible and I'm still going to enjoy it. So
Yeah, show me a 30 handicap playing it, and I'll tune in to watch it. I mean, I'll watch anything.
I'd watch practically anybody or anything playing Augusta National. So doesn't hurt that they're the best women's amateur players in the world doing it instead. So and very cool for Amelia. And I mean, she's got obviously a good media background, and I know she's kind of talked about resisting the urge to turn professional. But I mean, she does the job well with you co-hosting another golf podcast.
Yeah, she does a good job making me sound good, that's for sure.
Transition a little bit. World Long Drive's back, and
Yes.
these are an official partner. You guys have the official ball, the E9. We talked a little bit about this last time we talked, but for people who maybe didn't catch that conversation, can you give them a little bit of background on E9 and how the partnership came together with World Long Drive?
Yeah, so we originally set out and we were working with the World Long Drive guys when they were still with the PLDA, and we were helping them design a golf ball that would fit their needs for a competition. And you know, there's a lot that goes into designing a golf ball that'll kind of stand up for a really for the number one thing of being pure distance. And so we started talking with them and connecting them with our R&D team. And trying to figure out what specification would be best for their competition. And so that really opened up the doors for us to also bring that ball to the consumer landscape and provide a golf ball that really does, first and foremost, you know, put distance first. You know, this is the type of player that needs to hit it a little bit further and, you know, get a little bit more distance off the tee, get a little closer to the green. You know, the short game, element isn't as important to them, so they rely a lot on their long game and you know mid irons and you know hitting onto the green as close as possible. So when we started working with them, there was a delicate balance of firmness versus you know forgiveness. And when you talk about forgiveness, you're talking about like taking spin off of a golf ball. You know, the spinnier the golf ball is, the harder it is to control. So, you know, we wanted to kind of walk that fine line of making it firm enough to where we can get those really great ball speeds, you know, off the tee, but then not so firm to where the ball is spinning at 3,500 during these competitions. And then, you know, consumer is the same thing. We wanted it to work in both landscapes. So we really leaned on to the longest hitters in the world without a shadow of a doubt. These guys are it. We're talking about guys who swing, you know, their averages are well over 125 and beyond. So we got a lot of data from them, you know, early last summer, and then they actually used a prototype in their world championships last year that, you know, that we tested and used, and the feedback was so good. I mean, one of the biggest things they said was the ball speed is great, you know, but then a lot of them kept saying like I hit more balls in the grid than I ever have. And that was kind of that fine line of like, you know, not putting too much spin on the ball to where it's still controllable. Because from a consumer standpoint, we don't want to bring a ball to the market that is tough to control as far as off the tee. So that was a strength of the E9 that we wanted to kind of be built into that specification of that ball. So it's been super fun working with them. A lot of great feedback. We're talking after every one of their events. We're speaking with them about the performance of the golf ball. We're supplying a lot of their players are reaching out for more and more of them so they could, you know, test it and be prepared for their events. So the partnership has been amazing. We're super excited for these events that are going to get televised. And then the national championship is going to be right down the road. Just talked about another event right down the road, but they're going to have their national championship at Bobby Jones here in Atlanta. So we're excited to host them in our home city and kind of see it with our own eyes and everybody from the office to get out there and kind of support this championship event.
Getting a little nerdy on the E9. I can't remember if we talked about this last time, but I think you had mentioned that one of the big problems that long drivers face is they swing so hard, they start to kind of see decreasing returns with each incremental mile per hour of club head speed. Is there anything that was done or could be done to kind of help that curve a little bit with the E9, or is there just kind of a max wall that science is just not going to let us get past?
Yeah, there's definitely a diminishing return on firmness because if you make it too firm, then it gets brittle. You know, then they're cracking balls left and right. And so if you make it too firm, then you take away the ability of the ball to rappel off the face and bounce back to its original shape, and it just starts to crack. The other side of that is if you make it too soft, then it's sitting on the face and it's over smushing, one would say. And then you're going to look at smash factors where guys are swinging so fast that their ball speed doesn't really, you're starting to get down in the like 135
Ooh.
smash factors, and it's not good. So, like, these guys swing hard at it. They play differently than the game of golf. So smash factor is maybe not as important as playing around, but they still look at smash factor and they want to make sure that the ball's coming off at, I mean, a 142 to 145 at least off the club face. You know, obviously if you're hitting it good in the center, then you're going to start approaching that 1.5. But as you kind of stated, they're, you know, they swing so hard that you're getting close to that limit of the materials of the golf ball. So you, it's a balance. Like if we'd have made this thing firmer, they possibly could have popped one of these balls in competition. But if you make it softer, then they might be hitting knuckleballs out there that doesn't carry as long as they want. And again, that was one thing that they did say about the grid too, was that their carry distances were a lot longer than what they're used to, you know, because they can flight it in the air, but the descending landing angle is still very shallow. You don't want it to be steep when it's falling out of the sky and just plopping and not rolling out. So there's a lot of things with the dimple design, how firm the core was. I know we went through a ton of different core makeups to kind of find that one that was right in the middle. And that was one thing you said you'd listen to the World Long Drive podcast that Ryan Riesbeck said. He said that a couple guys use similar wording of like, it's a very fair ball for what we have. You know, sometimes they'd get a ball that's like super spinny, and then it's very fair to the guys who are low spin. And then if a guy is like a high spin, hits a cut out there and trying to find the grid, all of a sudden he's getting penalized because they're playing a spinny, you know, urethane firm golf ball. So he felt a lot of guys came up to him and said, man, the ball's really good. It seems fair. It kind of levels out kind of right in the middle of the sweet spot where everybody needs to be. So if you're a high spin player, it still is okay. You're still high spin. And if you're low spin, it doesn't take a ton of spin off to where you're hitting knuckleballs.
Maybe a random question. I don't know if you know the actual dispersion of this. For long drivers, do most of them hit cuts, draws, or just straight balls? Like, what are they trying to do out there?
We've asked the same question, and it really is different because obviously if you hit a straight, you know, TrackMan will tell you a straight ball will go the longest, right? If you hit a straight ball at a certain condition, that's the ideal launch conditions. But obviously if you're fighting wind, you know, because the ball is in the air so daggum long that they are thinking about things like that. Like if there's a little wind off the left, they may hit a cut even though it's not really their go-to, because if they hit a draw, the ball's in the air for so long that it's actually fighting wind. So a lot of the players have their kind of go-to sweet swing. I mean, you look at a guy like Borgmeier, and you know he'll hit a cut out there that'll just go for days. And then you know Berkshire Kyle may cover one and you know start down the right and really pull it in. But it also depends on what round they're in. You know, if they want to hit the grid and get a lot of numbers on the board, you know, guys will kind of work it down the left and just get some on the grid, and then they'll open up for the last, you know, five balls inside of their round. So there's a lot of guys that have a strategy of getting something out there and then building on that. And then there's guys who just go literally full out the entire time, and every ball they swing at is as hard as they can try to hit it and get it out there.
All right, let's shift gears a little bit away from the people who can hit it farther than we can ever imagine to people who are funny about the golf that you and I might play. And that's the St. Andre folks. And you've teamed up with them for folks who aren't initiated or don't do Instagram or TikTok. Could you kind of tell us how you found these guys, where how they burst on the scene, and how you guys came together on a relationship where now you're going to be doing content with them?
Yeah, I mean, these guys have been, I can't stress how fun and good these guys have been to work with. We started out in a conversation kind of in middle to end of last year. The great thing about these guys is they were local, they were Atlanta, And so I've started to work with a lot of content people in this area. And I mean, Atlanta has a lot of like movie and comedy improv stuff going on in town. So I've gotten to know a lot of studios and stuff in the area. And as I looked, I saw these guys starting to get into golf. And I remember talking to one of the groups that we worked with called Fuel Films, who helps us on all of our digital stuff. And I was just mentioned it. And he goes, "Man, I know one of the guys. We've shot something with them before." And so it kind of happened like that. And we got hooked up and we started having these ideas of how we were gonna, really put the pro in a situation they're not normally in. So today we launched a piece of content to where Tiger does the classic, he tips the ball off the tee. And the joke, not to give too much away, but the joke is like the guys are like really like conflicted on whether they should say that's one. That's what everybody says, though. Everybody in the group says
One,
that's one. So like they're conflicted and there's this inner turmoil of whether they should say it or not. And so not to give it all away, we have a series of these videos that are featuring one of our tour players and then these guys in a situation that you normally wouldn't see a tour player in. And I got the pleasure of kind of directing these and writing these, and the St. Andre guys were a big part of that too, helping me. And it was just fun sitting around. We've been in the business so long, that you start talking about those tropes inside of the golf business of hitting one off the tee, of using a ball retriever, of a blower going off in your backswing, the things that happen to the everyday guy that maybe a tour player doesn't have to deal with. They don't have a blower going off in the middle of their swings. They got a marshal holding back. So we have some really fun content. That group is absolutely hilarious. They are so daggum funny. They're so good. We had the pleasure of them showing up for our sales meeting in January that we did around the PGA show, and they just had all of our entire office in stitches, just laughing. They did an amazing job being in person, and then obviously these videos are so good, and I'm so excited for them, so proud of them. I'm so happy that we're connected with the St. Andre group, and I just look forward to doing more stuff with them. This is just the tip of the iceberg, what's seen kind of this week, and we'll have some stuff coming out as the Masters goes and beyond in the next few weeks.
It feels like, I mean, every golf brand's got their way to connect with their consumer, right? Some do it with an influencer, some do it with the influencers who play golf, some do it with the influencers who make fun of golf, some do a little mixture of both. But it feels like maybe part of the goal here was to try to showcase not only the St. Andre folks, but also your staff and put them in a position that they look a little bit different than just golfers hitting good golf shots, which you can see them do most weekends.
Yeah, I mean, we have always been the brand that we take what we make very seriously, but in our marketing in the past, we don't take ourselves so seriously, and we're not afraid to have a little fun. So yeah, we could have went out and probably found a group that, is in their, low to mid 20s that hit amazing golf shots and make content and is pumped up and that bro style of content. But we decided to kind of find a group that fits in well with us. And, it quite frankly, it happened pretty flawlessly, and they fit our mold so good, and they kind of get our style. And, putting those players in those awkward situations not only is going to look funny in the videos, but it was hilarious on the day. Like when I'm trying to explain to somebody, a pro who's won a major and millions of dollars, that I'm going to put this apron on you with a squeegee for this shot. Are you cool with that? It's so fun. And the St. Andre guys made it a little easier joking around with the guys and loosening them up. So it was a fun day and definitely an entertaining with a splash of brand awareness is what we're going for with the St. Andre group.
Hopefully, folks go check out the content as it rolls out. Start with Tigers today and throughout the Masters and as things go on. I'm sure there's a whole lot more you got planned. So excited to check that out. Always excited to talk to you. Just catch up about golf and Bridgestone and life and how all that comes together. And it's always a good conversation. So thanks for doing this with
Yeah, no problem, man. It just feels like a good chat between friends, and
me.
always good to catch up and talk a little bit about Bridgestone.